Esther and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Esther.
I was born December 26, 1982 at 4:12 in the morning in Huntsville Hospital in Huntsville, Alabama. My dad was a pastor. We lived in Oakwood. I traveled all around the South growing up because he was a pastor and he preached at different churches. Before he did that, before he got into the ministry, he was a pot-smoking musician. And when I was about 11 years old, my great-grandmother died, and he was tired of being a pastor. And so he asked my great-aunt if we could move into that house. So we moved back to Alabama when I was 11 years old. I was in Christian schools growing up, nothing but church schools. But when we got to Alabama, I started a public school. In seventh grade, I was a good little girl. I made A's, I didn't have many friends, and I didn't do anything wrong. Well, eighth grade is a totally different story. Eighth grade, I made all the wrong friends and wanted to do what they did. And when I was in eighth grade, 13 years old, it was my first time that I tried alcohol. I was staying with my little friend who lived with her grandmother, and when Granny went to bed, you know, she would sneak out of the house. So I went with her. And she had this older boyfriend with a souped-up truck, and, you know, she went to do her thing with him. And I was just there. I just went with her because she was sneaking out, and I would spend the night with her. So we went, and he had a brother that was living there who sort of wanted something, and I was like, no, we were going to sit on the couch and watch Pinky and the Brain. So that's what we did. And he brought out moonshine, and I thought, ooh, this tastes good. I like this. I will just sit on the couch, drink moonshine, and watch Pinky and the Brain. And that's what I did. Well, when they took us back, all hell was breaking loose because my dad was there. And my dad was like, Esther, what have you done? Where have you been? Oh, nothing, Dad. We just went to see a friend of hers. Esther, what is that I smell? Have you been drinking? No, Dad, nothing. I have not touched anything, Dad. No. He was like, Esther, you've been drinking. This is horrible. And so he yanked me out of public school and found a little Christian school for me to homeschool. And so I was homeschooling, and then he got a girlfriend, and she moved in. And she loved to drink, and I joined her. And she went to all her son's football games, and we would drink the whole drive there, away games, home games. We drank, and we drank, and we drank. And then I started attending the Christian school. And then I was old enough to start high school. So me and her talked him into letting me start high school. So I started high school. And I learned even more things in high school. I learned about beer bonfires out in the woods. I learned about Canadian mist. I learned about all different types of things. And that's all I did was party. I didn't go to class. I skipped school. I made F's. And at the end of ninth grade, we were all sitting out in the gym. And they said, okay, people, we're going to speak a homeroom, and we'll name your names, and those are going to be your homerooms for next year. Well, they never called my name. And we were all sitting in the gym, and I looked around. It was me and everybody I knew. And they said, if we did not call your name, you have failed the ninth grade. And I was like, well, this is okay. These are all my friends. We'll all have classes together. This is just going to be fine and dandy. So the next day, they let us try out our classes to see how it was going to be. Well, all my classes, none of my friends were in them. It was just these little babies. They were just little babies. You know, I felt older, you know. And I was like, I'm not doing this. I am not going to do this, you know. So I told my dad, I said, Dad, I want to drop out of school. And he said, what? I said, Dad, I failed the ninth grade. It's not the same. I can't do it. He said, well, I'll make a deal with you, Esther. If you drop out of school and get a job, I've already got a job lined up you can probably do. If you drop out of school and get a job and promise me you will get your GED in a year, you can do that. And I said, okay. So he went to the principal and he said, I'm taking her out of school. And the principal was all like, what? Don't do that. Her life will suck. She'll be a failure. Don't do that. And my dad was like, we'll show you. That's what he told the principal. So I got my first job at Western Sizzlin', and I made best friends with this 22-year-old who drank every day. And I drank every day. And that was when I learned all about George Dickel and Dr. Pepper, my favorite thing, when I was 16 years old. So she got fired, and I thought, well, I'm not going to work here if she doesn't work here, so I quit. So I quit, and she got a job bartending at this place called the Filling Station in Scottsboro. And so I would go, and even when she wasn't bartending, the owner was there, and the owner just thought it was so great, you know, to have me in there. So he would always tell the bartenders, give her whatever she wants, whenever she wants it. And I would get wasted every night. Wasted. And so I drank and I drank, and I worked at Dairy Queen, and then I met who I thought was, you know, a man. And I moved him in with me and my mom. I was living with my mom at this time. And anyways, he and I just, you know, we were our little couple, and he didn't like my drinking, but I drank. And then my mom met his stepdad when he came over to see him one day. Next thing you know, they get married, and they hook us up a little trailer in town. And so we're working, we're paying the bills, we're doing our thing, and he kept saying, I'm so sick of you drinking. I was like, I've got something I used to do when I was younger. And he was a lot older than me. You know, I was 16, he was 24. And he was like, here, I want you to try something. I was like, what? And it was meth. And so I started liking that. I like dropping pant sizes every week. I like staying up all night, cleaning the house, doing this and that. And that was when Dairy Queen first started doing breakfast. So I'd go in at 4 in the morning, and I just loved it. Well, we got a job at a plant job. We both worked at a plant. And then, you know, a year had passed, and it was time for me to get my GED. So I went to classes, and I did really good on my GED. I scored high enough that this little community college near my hometown said, we will give you a scholarship. You can go to school for 2 years for free. And I was nervous because I'd never done school before, but I thought, okay, I'm going to try this. So it just so happened that this little man of mine, his mom was a secretary for a lecture class on campus. Or whatever. She was secretary, whatever. Anyways, it was my first big test. It was a lecture class. I was nervous. My dad gave me a little tape recorder. I recorded all the classes because I didn't have books, you know. And I went in there, and she called him and told him that I made the highest grade for that class, that morning class. And he got jealous. So he quit his job and told me to go back to work and pay the bills. Now, I used to hold a resentment about this, but I don't anymore because it was my choice to stay and do that, you know. I could have gone live with my dad, stayed in school, bettered my life, but I didn't do that. So anyways, life went on. I drank, I drugged, I partied. And when I was about 19 years old, I had paid my car off, my first little car, my Mighty Tercel. I paid it off. And I was selling meth to buy gas and cigarettes and living at home. And my dad paid my insurance. And all these commercials kept coming on the TV about an army of one, tired of the life you're living, want to give up your life and start something new, a new, better life. Join us at an army of one. And I would sit there and watch the commercial, and I thought, but I didn't want to quit partying, you know. Well, then one night I came in. I had been up for like 5 or 6 days. I saw the commercial and I broke down crying. And I thought, maybe I should do that, you know. Maybe I should do that. So the next morning, I said, Dad, I got an idea. He said, okay, what? I said, how? What would you think about me joining the Army? Esther, that's the best idea you've ever had. I was like, okay. I am taking you to a Huntsville recruiter. Right now. We're going right now. I'll call into work. We're going right now. I was like, okay. So we went, and we saw the Huntsville Recruiter. And I decided that this was going to be my life. Army was going to be my life. I wanted sobriety, so I quit hanging out with old friends. I was staying clean, and I took my test, and they looked at me and they said, "What would you like to be?" And I said, "I don't know." And they said, "Well, we've got a little idea. You scored high in this area, and we think you should be a diesel mechanic." And I was real tiny, you know. I was tiny when I was younger. But with and without drugs, I was tiny. Anyways, they said, "We'll just pick you up and put you inside the diesel engine. You can work on it and then jump out." And I thought that was funny. I was like, "Okay, I'll do it. Sure, I'll do it." So then I was waiting to leave for basic, and my dad said, "Esther, I've got an idea." I said, "What, Dad?" He said, "You're doing really good. You're fixing to have a good income. We need to get you a new car." I said, "Really?" He said, "Really." So we went to Bill Penny in Huntsville, and I kept staring at this Celica. It was brand new, 2002 Toyota Celica. It had the high spoiler, and it was up on blocks, you know. And I would just look at it like, "Wow." And Dad was like, "Is this the one you want?" And I was like, "Dad, I don't know." "Yes, Esther, is this the one you want? We will get this one." I was like, "Okay." And I was so nervous driving that thing back home. I was so nervous in that car. But then I got used to it, and I loved it. And anyways, I started working. I thought it would be good for me to work and get into better shape for basic. So I was working at Maples Rugs in Scottsboro. I was a packer stacker. And I did that, and one night I went to a party, and they slipped a Mickey in my drink, and I knew they had done that. I was getting sleepy, so I jumped in my car, and I fell asleep driving home, and I totally crashed my car, and I had over 180 stitches in my face here. They sent me to Erlanger, you know. And then I left for basic, and I'll never forget going, and I was at the airport in St. Louis, and they were there with a big bus, and they were screaming, "Come on, move, 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 let's go, go, go." And I was like, "Can't we smoke one cigarette before the bus ride?" He was like, "What?" And I was like, "Come on, it'll be our last cigarette." He was like, "Fine, everybody take your cigarettes out, smoke one cigarette, then throw the whole pack and lighter away." So we smoked a cigarette, and then we got on the bus. And my recruiter, he said, "Don't pack." He told me to pack a lot of stuff. He said, "It's a few days for you to get your uniforms. Pack a lot of stuff." So I had this luggage bag like this, you know. The next day, I got my duffel bag full. I had it on my bag, this big duffel in my arms. It sucked. Anyways, I liked basic. I enjoyed it. I was the fastest girl in my platoon at taking apart my M16 and putting it back together. I'm quite proud of that. But anyways, my fourth week, we were marching to the gas chamber, and I took one step, and I screamed at the top of my lungs. And a girl dropped back to be my battle buddy, and every time I took a step, I would scream. Anyways, I hobbled finally to the gas chamber. I was the last one to go through, and my drill sergeants knew something was wrong. They were like, "Private Williams, something has happened. What is going on?" And I was like, "My leg, it hurts, it hurts, it hurts." They were like, "First thing in the morning, go to the troop medical center." So I went to the troop medical center. Well, I had this lieutenant colonel of the Air Force, and he looked at me, and he said, "I'm sick of you privates coming here trying to get out of basic." I was like, "No, seriously, I'm in pain. I love basic. Something's wrong. I don't want to hear it." He looked at my leg and said, "Maybe you got elephantitis syndrome," because it was swollen. He said, "I don't want to hear it. I want to see you for another 7 days." So I went back, and I marched on it with my M16. I couldn't climb over the barricades and stuff, but I did the best I could. And when I went back, he said, "Fine, I'll give you an x-ray," and it was broken. So I had surgery. I had crutch races. I went home on con leaves. And I asked him, I said, "Do you think I'll be able to stay in the Army?" He said, "Probably not." So when I got back home from the Army, I didn't know what to do. I was really upset. So I started drinking and drugging, And my dad called the police and said, "Search her room. She's got drugs in there." He was like, "Sir, I can't do that without whatever it is they use to search places. A warrant, whatever. Not a warrant. I forget what it's called." And he was like, "Well, search her room. She's got drugs in there." I was like screaming, "Dad, if you don't effing shut up, I will kill you." He said, "Whoa, that's threatening a life. Little lady, you're coming with me." So I went to jail for my first time. And I was highly intoxicated, and it was in the evening. Well, the next morning I woke up and I went to court. And I was still very much intoxicated. And the judge was telling me the things he wanted me to do. And I said, "Rehab? What? I'm not going to rehab. Stay away from my old friends. What? You're not telling me who I hang out with. Bailiff, take her away." So he sentenced me to a year. That was the other thing besides rehab and doing good, you know. So I did 3 months, and I started writing many letters. "You were right, Judge Grider. I need rehab. I need rehab. I need to change my life. You know what's best for me, Judge Grider. And can I be on house arrest while I wait for rehab?" So I got to go on house arrest. And to me, I thought, this is fun. I'm not getting drug tested. I can do whatever I want. So I partied the whole time I was on house arrest. Well, then they said, "There's a bed available for you at rehab." I was like, "Okay." So they took the ankle bracelet off. They took me to rehab. And I failed a drug test for everything. They were like, "We want you to take a drug test." I was like, "What? I'm coming here to learn to be sober." "No, you have to be sober to come to rehab." I was like, so I failed it and went back and did 6 months. And then I did my first rehab, and I didn't pay much attention, let's just put it that way. And as soon as I was out, I thought, well, I can drink. It's not drugging. I'm doing okay. And my dad was all like, "Esther, you're out of control. We've got to stop this. You need to go somewhere." So they sent me to the rehab in Murfreesboro, VA, and then to Operation Stand Down. Well, I learned that time, or I thought I did. You know, it didn't last back then, but this was 2004, and I thought, okay, sober, sober, sober. I got a sponsor. I started going to meetings, and then come along this little guy I rode the van with, and I had 6 months, and he had like 4 months, and we started dating, and next thing you know, he's all like, "I found us a place," and I'm like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, it's got furniture and everything. It's furnished." I was like, "What?" He was like, "Come scope it out." So it was on Nolensville, and I scoped it out, and I said, "Let me think about it." And my sponsor, of course, was all like, "Esther, you don't even have a year yet. You don't need to look at a relationship." "Oh, but I love him. This is the one." And he was like, "Well, does he go to meetings with you? You know, blah, blah, blah." So we got the place, and he proposed, and I thought, wow, you know. And one night he came in from work and he slammed the door and he was all upset. And I said, "Babe, what's going on?" He was like, "I'm going to a meeting, leave me alone." So he was gone. Well, time kept ticking and he wasn't coming back home. So I called everybody in his family, everybody from Operation Stand Down, all of his sober friends, and nobody had heard from him. So I knew he had relapsed. So I woke up early the next morning and I called my dad. I said, "Dad, come get my stuff, take it back to your house. I'll load up my car with stuff. I'm going back to Operation Stand Down." And I left him a note that said, "You used, you lost me," in the engagement ring. And I never saw him again. Well, I thought I was doing good. I was sober. I got a little studio apartment. And, you know, I had my job. I was working for Cleaning Authority. That's a good job. I love that job. It was neat. Anyways, I had a friend, a new partner for Cleaning Authority. And she taught me how to make White Russians. So I discovered the joy of making White Russians in the blender. And that's what I did. I lived and drank all the time. And one night I was sitting in my little apartment and I was alone and I was drunk, and I thought, I'm all alone. And I was just like, I'm all alone, you know. I don't have a man. I'll never get married. I'll never do all this. I was just depressed and acting stupid. So I was on medicine because, yes, I've had trips to the psych ward. I have mental health issues. And I thought, well, I'll just take all my medicine and go to sleep. And I'll just sleep forever. So I took, like, a bunch of pills. And I thought, I want to call my baby sister. I'm going to call my baby sister and say goodbye to her. So I called her. And I kept saying, I love you. Don't miss me. It's going to be okay. Goodbye. And I was mumbling. And she knew something serious had happened. So she called the paramedics. And they took me to Southern Hills. And she went into traumatic shock. And she had to go to the hospital for that. I remember waking up in Southern Hills and this little young male nurse saying, your heart stopped 3 times. We had to fight to bring you back. And I was like, what? So I went back home. And I partied some more. I went to the mission, to Hope Center. I did that in 2008, and it was really Christian-based, you know, and I thought I was doing good, I was doing it, and I got a phone call one day, and it was from my mom telling me my stepdad had had a heart attack at work, and I just started screaming, and so she came and got me to take me home for the funeral, and I didn't go back, I just stayed there. So I got a job working for a moving company as the head packer. And I did that. And I partied. And then in 2009, I went to the warehouse for a little while. Just a little while. And my meds weren't right. And I was just not wanting the program and thinking all these bad thoughts. And so I left and I went to the hospital and ended up having to have ECTs. And then I got out and I went to Buffalo Valley. And from there I went to the next step or the next stage. It's a women's halfway house for veterans. And I worked in market strategies. And I went to meetings, and then I had a veteran friend that said, you should date my nephew. Y'all would make a great couple. So he started calling me, and I started talking to him. And he taught me all new drugs. And so in 2010, I got me an apartment off Harding Place. And he moved right on in there with me. And all I did was party. And I flipped out and didn't want to live there anymore. Didn't feel safe. And so my dad came up and packed all my stuff up, took it back to the building outside his house. And I told him I was going to live at the mission because that's where I wanted to be. So I left my apartment and I went to the mission. And I stayed there, and I drank, and did my thing, and I kept not taking my medicine. I kept thinking, this medicine is making me fat, this medicine is poison, so I wouldn't take it. So I ended up passing out in the front lobby, and paramedics came and got me. I went back to the VA, had ECTs again, and then when I got out of that, I went back home. I went back home. I was in an accident. And I was in an accident. And I had to learn how to walk all over again. And I thought the rehab was the greatest thing in the world because they served wine and crackers at 3 every day. And so after that, my dad didn't want me to come back home because he didn't trust me. So I went to Transitions, and I was there a couple months, and then my dad let me come back home, and I got another car, another Celica, because that was my little dream car that I kept wrecking, And I got a place. I was living on my own. And I thought, I had it made. I thought, I can do whatever I want, whenever I want, and I don't have to answer to anybody. Woo! Little did I know that all the drinking and drugging was just messing up my meds. Messing up my meds. And so, I thought I saw a UFO. And I flipped out. And I took off driving. And I thought, where can I go? So I went to the VA. There was all sorts of cars in the parking lot. And I thought, oh, it's a trap. So I ended up running out of gas in Murfreesboro. And I just pulled over. And I got a DUI. And I went to the worst jail in the world, Murfreesboro Jail. And I got out. I went back home. I continued to party. And one night I caught an ambulance and I went to this little hospital in Jasper. I can't think of the name of it. Jasper, Tennessee. And then I left there. And I called my dad and I said, come get me. Because I didn't have my car because I couldn't drive, you know, because of the DUI. And he said he was leaving, but I waited and he wasn't there. So I took off walking on down 24. I was like, well, I'll just walk to Nashville. Next thing I know, a cop pulls up. Your father is waiting at the hospital. Get in this car, little lady. I was like, okay. So I got in the car, went back to the hospital, got in the car. Dad didn't know what to do. So he was like, we're taking you to the VA. That's where you were headed walking anyway. We're taking you to the VA. So we went to the ER at the VA in Nashville. And I lied to him and said no to all their questions. I didn't want to stay there, you know. So my dad didn't have any choice but to blow me up in the car, and back to Alabama we went. Well, in the car, I had been up days, mind you, and drinking too. And I was thinking that there was a bomb in the car. I kept thinking it's August 11th, 2011, you know, a month before 9/11, and there's a bomb in this car. You know, these were the little thoughts, the little voices, you know, there's a bomb in the car. And I didn't want my dad and stepmom to die, so I thought, well, I'll jump off, because they said the bomb wouldn't go off if I jumped off. So I jumped out of a car at 70 miles an hour. And they called the VA, and the VA said, she'll bleed to death if you take her here. She needs life flight, and she needs to go to Erlanger in Chattanooga. So that's what I did. And my sober date is August 12th, 2011. Because I almost died. It was very scary. That's how out of control my life was. And I haven't touched anything since then. Now, I've had, my sponsor told me that was a fine sober date, you know, because I changed my life. I've had other people tell me, well, you should just pick when you got to the warehouse. You know, girls at the warehouse have told me that before. And I said, no, you know, because this is my sober date, you know. This is when I didn't touch anything else, you know. And I went to rehab at Mending Hearts, and I went to a program in Tuscaloosa, Alabama at the VA. It was like three different programs I went to. And I would go to AA, and I would go to church, and I would go to all my little classes at three different units. I was bounced around a lot there. And, you know, it was harder for me to stay sober there than it was the warehouse. The warehouse, everybody's sober. We're living right. We're following a program. In Tuscaloosa, people are coming up to me all the time. Do you want some pain pills? I got some pain pills. Here, take some pain pills. There was a little gas station across from the hospital that sold wine, beer, mixed drinks. Do you want a hurricane? I got hurricanes. Do you want to smoke this synthetic pot? You can pass a drug test. It'll be okay. And I would just scream, no, get away from me. And I would walk away, you know. Now, I'm not going to say that every now and then I don't have thoughts, because every now and then I do have thoughts. There was that time I went to the shade tree and I talked about how I kept having thoughts of going to the park and drinking beer in my car all day. Every now and then, I have thoughts. But once I got to the Wow House, I surrendered and I started doing steps. And y'all remember when I first started coming to meetings, you know, I had that little pouty face scowl on my face like, yeah, I'm sober, but I'm not sure if I want to be. Yeah, I stayed sober for a while. But sobriety has taught me so much. It has got me close to God, which is amazing for me. Because in the Army, I got into Satanism. And I thought the devil ruled the world. And I struggled. And I would get back into God religion. And then I would think, he doesn't forgive me because all my satanic rituals and all that. You know, he doesn't forgive me. God couldn't love me for all the things I've done, you know. And Ed has taught me that he kept me alive for a reason. He loves me. He helps me stay sober every day. And he has forgiven me. That was the past. You know, a wise woman always tells me, God knows the future before you do. And he's kept you alive. And it's because he forgives you and you're a child of his. And I live one day at a time. And it's a blessing. These are my little reminders, my little bracelets. One of them, the Fabulous Cecile gave me for Christmas last year, says one day at a time. And the other one is a recent bracelet that I got out of the little candy machine at Golden Corral called Faith. And every morning I wake up and I look at my little bracelets that I never take off. I see Faith. I see one day at a time. I say my prayers. I try and do my devotion every morning, but sometimes I don't always do the devotion, but I do say my prayers. And I thank them every night, and I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for the fellowship. I'm grateful for how far I've come. It's just a blessing. Sobriety is a blessing. You know, when I first started in sobriety, I wanted to change my life, you know. My life was hell. And then I did change my life, you know. And that's all I got.
Can we have Esther close us out? Esther.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it. Sucks if you don't.
I like that sweater.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's nice. It's perfect.